This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And a fond good morning, one and all. A beautiful Saturday morning, too, Charlie.
Apparently there's some rain in the forecast for this afternoon, but tomorrow's going to be gorgeous. And you're finally going to get a day off tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. So. I was working all last week for Normie Edwards. Boy, oh boy, I'm tuckered.
I bet you
tuckered,
are.
But
long shift.
Always delighted to come in on a Saturday morning to sit in with you in studio and talk to our listeners. And that's the main thing I better get out, huh? The phone numbers.
Get those listeners calling.
You got it. Yeah, we haven't got anybody online yet. But you can correct that, I'm sure, right now.
I'm sure Josephine is hitting...
Oh, she's hitting the buttons right now.
Speed dial as we speak.
Okay. In Toronto area, call 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province, of course, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. A couple of little rules we have here, our mantra: call early, call often, one question per call. Don't try to sneak that second one in. And if you're a first-time caller...
always somebody trying to sneak something in there.
Sebastian is our operator today. Mm-hmm. And so when you call in your first-time caller, let him know. He'll let me know. And when you get to the air, that's what you're going to hear. Get your garden wings.
That's right.
Yeah.
Very special. Okay. So the exhibition is on.
Oh, yes.
You know it's the middle of August.
Yep.
And you know that means September's coming.
Yep. End of the summer.
End of the summer.
Whenever I hear those three little letters, CNE, goodbye summer.
Where did it go?
But it didn't even start. You know, that's what I feel. Holy mackerel.
We've had some warm weather. We've had some heat the last few weeks.
True. But it took so long to get here.
Well, it's been so wet.
And the rain. Yeah, the rainy weather.
I was in Prince Edward County this past week for a couple of days, and Lake Ontario is still way up. It's probably,
at the heights,
excuse me, could look this up, but it's probably a meter higher right now than it would have been normally at this time of year.
Isn't that weird?
And it's gone down a lot.
Just because of the precipitation that we've had?
I guess, yeah. And the ground is so saturated, it all just runs off into the lakes. Anyway, stuff going on. Uh-huh. Let me share an email for those of you who have heard me refer to companion planting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we talk about certain plants protect other plants, garlic being well known for that, from insects particularly, and then other plants act as the target or the lure for insects to protect the plants that we don't want to have eaten, so we'll put something else that we don't mind if it's eaten. So lots of different kind of ways to design the garden to maximize companionability between plants. And one of our listeners has heard me refer to some of this. Her name is Megan, and she sent a quick email and just said that she loves the show, and she has a suggestion of a gardening book that is very specific called Carrots Love Tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the name of the book, Carrots Love Tomatoes. It's by Louise Riott, R-R-I-O-T-T-E, and it's all about companion gardening. She said it's very comprehensive, it's well laid out, and an extremely helpful book. It covers partnering of plants for beneficial growth and also how to plant for pest control. So I have used it for years, and I highly recommend it. So just wanted to let me know share that out with the listeners.
That's good, okay.
So Carrots Love Tomatoes, if you're interested in learning more about companion gardening.
Very good, okay.
Everything else, I've got stuff going on, but nothing for the next couple of weeks. So I think we'll just hold off on, because, starting September 1st,
look out.
Everything starts up again. All the Hortus sites, all the events.
They all go crazy.
August is still pretty cool. We can still really remain calm.
Let's try and just keep everything on a simmer.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
To a boil, right?
Exactly.
All right. Frank Proctor here, along with Charlie Dobbin, our expert gardener. master gardener, I guess is the correct term, but...
Well, I'm a horticulturalist.
And you're a nice person, too.
Oh,
see, there you go.
There you go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Back in just a couple of moments to see, we had a full line of callers calling in. We'll get to those momentarily.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And Charlie, you wouldn't believe, I'm looking at the lines here, three of our first four callers are all first-time callers.
Nice.
Yeah, so my bell-ringing arm is going to be getting worn out. Heather, this is for you, calling in from Scarborough. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning, Frank.
Nice to have you with us.
Hi, Frank. I'm the other half of Paul who phones in all the time and talks to you.
Oh, right. Okay. Paul and Heather. I always used to ask about my cat.
Dickens, yes. Okay. My question is, I have a chestnut tree. I've had it for about 5 years. Excuse me. And I've noticed the last couple of years, the leaves on the top, they're all dried out, dark brown. They look like potato chips.
Mm-hmm. And you notice that in August.
Yeah.
You know what that is?
No.
It's actually a very common syndrome that happens to chestnut trees.
Uh-huh.
To some extent weather dependent. It's called scorch. It's just a simple scorch. It's where you're right. The leaves are like potato chips. They're just crispy and brown, and I believe it's fungal. It's a fungal disease in nature because we have springs and summers like this one, where we've just had tons and tons of humidity and high levels of moisture, the fungal diseases have been very happy this season. And it doesn't hurt the tree. I mean, it shortens its ability to photosynthesize with those leaves. But as long as you've got some green on it, I wouldn't be overly concerned. But it is something you can expect to see pretty regularly towards the end of every summer. Even on the big old chestnuts, you'll see it quite often. All the leaves are just all yellow and brown and crispy.
Oh, well, these are dark brown, and they're all over the lawn, but I figured, I don't know what to do with the tree. I thought, should I cut it down? I don't want to do that.
No, I wouldn't cut it down. I mean, they're beautiful in the spring with their flowers. They do make a very lovely shade tree. They are native. I mean, there's a lot of good things to be said about chestnuts. They, of course, provide the actual little chestnuts at some point, which the squirrels will have a lot of fun picking and, throwing at you.
I haven't seen that yet.
Well, it's not old enough yet. It's got to reach a certain level of maturity. So, there's a lot to be said that's positive about chestnuts, but they do become very big trees. So make sure it's got a place where it can really, expand to its full size, width and height.
I see.
But unfortunately, that's the one time when they don't look good is late summer quite often.
Okay, so there's nothing really I can do, spray or?
Not that I know of. Oh. I'll double check and see if you can do anything to prevent, be preemptive, whether it's something like dormant spray in the spring or some kind of fungicide early in the summer, and I'll report back on that. But I don't think there's any way to prevent it.
I see.
Okay.
Frank, I didn't get my bell.
Oh, you did?
You did. Yeah, she wants two sets of wings.
Oh, well.
She's got the
there we are.
The dress-up wings and the everyday wings.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're welcome.
Both of you have a super day.
Thanks so much for calling, Heather.
Okay.
Don't be a stranger.
Yes, you had a Paul for me, too. That's nice. Pauline in Scarborough, one of the four who is not a first-time caller. So welcome back, Pauline.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Charlie. I have a bromeliad.
Yes, bromeliad, yep.
And it hasn't done anything really since I've gotten it. I've watered it, but it's, on the dry side. And it keeps getting groups of leaves, but that's it.
So when you got it, it probably had a big flower sticking out of the middle.
Yes, it did.
Pink flower or a red flower?
I'm not sure. I've had it for 2 years.
Okay.
Oh, red. I hear it was red.
And the leaves are probably green.
They're green, yeah.
So, all right. So bromeliads are a member of the same family as the pineapples. So if you sort of think about the way a pineapple grows, this is how bromeliads grow. So the leaves are quite leathery, and they grow in the shape of a vase, and in the center is a cup, if you will,
right,
where the new growth comes from, and where the flowers also come from. When you water a bromeliad, you water into that cup, into the center of the plant. You don't water the soil, you water in so that the plant always has water held in that little cup. And the reason why is because bromeliads originally evolved in the rainforest. So, and they have very, very limited root systems, like tiny little root systems. You'll often find them just kind of hanging up in trees or, you know, nestled in a little branch structure. So the roots are strictly used to kind of hold on and hold themselves upright. And when they're upright, it's all that rain and all that humidity and moisture that gathers in the center of the plant that provides all the perfect conditions for that plant to grow. So when you're watering, that's where you water. Now, yes, they do take sometimes a couple of years to flower again after, because when you buy them or you're given them, they're always flowering. The flowers last for months and months and months, and eventually they die off. And actually that mother plant dies when the flower dies, but daughter plants will grow. And it's just a process of waiting for them to be mature enough, and then they will flower as well. So it's just bright light, you know, regular room temperature, and keeping that water in the center of the plant.
Okay.
Ready?
Okay, Pauline?
I've had it for 2 years now and nothing.
Well, no, 2 years isn't that long. But it sometimes can take 3 or 4 years before it will flower again. Okay. So don't worry. Exactly.
That old saying, patience is a virtue, comes
That's
into play, right?
Gardening.
Thank you, Pauline.
Well, it's in a window.
You're good.
A north window.
That's fine.
Never been outside.
That's fine. Yep. No, all that's good. You know what? Just keep doing what you're doing, but water to the inside, like I said.
Okay. Right. Now, as we say goodbye to Pauline.
See, I'm just going to show you.
That's right, yes.
Picture. See, this is what a bromeliad looks
mm-hmm.
like. This is what. See how the flower comes out of the center?
Yep.
And you see how the water all kind of cycles down mm-hmm. into the center of the plant as well.
Okay.
All right.
Now, we do have a couple of lines open now, so let me repeat those phone numbers. 416-360-0740 in Toronto. Anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. The Garden Show on the air with Charlie Dobbin from Zoomer Radio, right here from the Zoomerplex in Liberty Village. And we should be back to say hi to another first-time caller. Wow.
Get that arm going.
Get that bell handy, Frankie. Okay, back in a moment.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, it's time for Frankie Proctor to get that bell in action once again. Hey, this time it's for Susie calling in from Barrie. Hi, Susie. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Hi, Charlie. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
Good morning.
I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I have a problem with my roses.
Mm-hmm.
I have about 20 bushes, Canadian roses.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, too, I didn't do anything about it last year. They're called beetles.
Japanese beetles.
Yeah. And they are horrible.
Mm.
Now, this year, too, they were eating especially my yellow or pink roses. And by now, they look awful.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful beginning of the summer. And I don't know what to do.
Well, honestly, the only thing you can do, well, there's two things you can do. One is you set up an alarm and you go outside every single day, about every 2 hours, with an empty, you know, tuna fish can in your hand and a little bit of water in the can and a drop of oil. And you go and you pick those beetles off the roses and you drop them in the can. And
they
drown.
Not every 2 hours, but I do daily.
Yeah. And no, it's hard. It's like quit a job to look after the roses. It's true. And they love roses. They're very slow moving insects. So they are very easy to pick and drown or squish, as the case may be. But squishing isn't recommended because when you squish, other Japanese beetles know that you've squished one and then they all come to the rescue.
Yikes.
So you don't want to, squishing's not recommended. Better to drown. But They do love roses, and yes, at my house they don't eat the roses, they eat the beans. So going back to that idea of companion gardening, you might want to consider having something like a lure, like beans, because then the Japanese beetles will just eat your bean plants and leave your roses alone next year. So, you know, there's that idea as well. There are traps, Japanese beetle traps, and they will attract. The traps are designed with pheromones in them to actually attract the beetles. I'm not a big fan of putting those traps
on my property.
Well, yeah,
it's like all the rest
property.
Of the beetles in the neighborhood. Come,
exactly.
Yeah.
Instead of having 100 beetles, you have 1,000 beetles. But and then you have to empty the traps because they get so full. Mm-hmm. But if you have in your neighborhood close by a schoolyard or a parking lot or a neighbor who's not around or a park or something, you just hang the trap there.
How about spray?
There's no spray that will kill them.
I went to the nursery last year and they gave me melatonin or something. Called.
Oh, they gave you malathion?
Yes, I think so.
In berry?
In berry, yeah.
I'd be surprised. Yeah, the only sprays that are out there that are for insects that they might sell you would be either a soap spray or something called pyrethrin spray. Technically, either of those could work, but the way they work is you have to coat the body, the entire body of the beetles, and they may not die. It might just slow them down. Yeah.
It's going to happen every year now, or is just...
Well, insect populations are very variable depending on the season. So some years we have lots of them and some years not so many. So if you're seeing a lot this year, chances are you won't see a lot next year. But the only other thing is you can protect your roses with netting, but then that kind of...
Yeah,
defeats the purpose of the beautiful roses. So, you know, there are what we call floating row covers. It's almost like a very fine mesh that you could put over the roses, which will keep them protected. And because there's just an optimal time when they eat. It's kind of mid-July to late August. There's kind of a 4 to 6 week window when they do all their eating. So, yeah, I mean, just the best thing I've always found is just keep going out there and keep picking them and drowning them.
Pick and drown.
I wish I had a better solution, but that's all I've got.
I love your diversionary tactics of putting him in a neighbor's yard who maybe is away on holidays. You're a riot. Thank you, Susie. Sorry, I know that Charlie would love to do more of a help, but there doesn't seem to be really anything other than that to do.
I know. They're right? Really a problem. Mm. And yeah.
Yep. Okay. 9:20, almost 9:30 on the button, actually. Mm. Let's... ring that bell for Patty in Brampton. Hello, Patty.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I really appreciate this.
Our pleasure.
I have been away from home for about 3 weeks and unfortunately haven't been tending to my garden. I have several beefsteak potato, tomato plants, and actually a spaghetti squash vine that's pulled some of them down to the ground with the tendrils. So I was out last night trying to pull them back up and put them onto tie them to the stakes, but because the tomatoes are on there and they're so heavy, they won't tie to the stakes. Like, they just droop right back down again. Is there some sort of a solution I can use?
Well, first off, you've got to snip those tendrils so that the squash plant is on the ground and the tomatoes are not being held by the squash.
Yes, I've done that.
So you've done that. So the tomatoes are now loose. It does, at this time, once the fruit has set like that and the weight is on those branches, the only thing you can do is have a number of stakes and give each branch its own stake. And you just need, you don't want to use like twist ties or anything sharp like that. You want to use loose pieces of pantyhose. I use some, there's sort of different little tomato clips out there. There's little Velcro strips you can use. But bottom line is, each branch, you basically kind of hold it up, and while you're holding it up, drive a stake in parallel to roughly the best you can do to hold that up, and then it's attaching the branch carefully to that stake and making sure, you know, it's a strong enough stake and it's driven into the ground far enough that it won't fall over with all the heavy tomatoes attached. But
okay.
In the future, next spring, for example, there are some things that I do just to try and be ahead of the game when all those tomatoes start to form. And I do use tomato cages just to help sort of support all the weight and the branches. But okay. You've got to get the tallest, minimum 4 foot. If you can find 5 foot cages, that's the best when it comes to beefsteaks. Some people actually build their own, which is amazing. Then you can make them, you know, really tall, because beefsteaks will get 6 and 7 feet tall. And a cage is only 3 or 4 feet tall, and you've still got, you know, 3 feet falling over at the top. So I do multi things. I do cage, I do steaks, and I train the tomato to stay inside the cage as much as I can, because they'll go all over the map if you don't stay on top of them. They'll yes. send shoots everywhere. Yeah.
How many tomatoes do you wind up with over the season, Charlie? You must open a store for heaven's sake.
Well, not really. You know what? My biggest issue is I keep putting my tomatoes back in the same spot, and your quality of tomato and or fruit, your harvest goes down as you don't rotate your crops. Right? That's the one limiting factor of repeatedly growing in the same spot. But yeah, so with those tomatoes, just do your best to get them off the ground, because you will get a far better yield, and you won't have all the slugs. There's an awful lot of slugs out there this year, and snails, and they'll start biting all over the tomatoes if they're anywhere near the ground.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling
welcome.
In, Patty.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
And welcome anytime, you know, second time callers. We love to hear from you again. Right. The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio, AM 740 and 96.7 FM in downtown Toronto. As we go out to Rexdale now, say hi to Trudy. Good morning, Trudy.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning, Charlie. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a problem with a hosta.
Yes.
Last year, a blight seemed to strike them all.
Uh-huh.
And 3 or 4 of them didn't come back this year at all.
Mm.
But the 2 of them that did come back puzzled me, because they used to be a high, beautiful high plant.
Mm.
Good half a meter high.
Okay.
And now when they came back this year, uh-huh. they are much smaller. They're very short. And, of course, now there's a big space around them,
right.
You know. So I don't really know whether they can change so much or what happened there.
They can't. Do the leaves, they're smaller, obviously, but do the leaves look similar to what they used to look?
They seem to look the same, but they did have a darker edge,
mm-hmm.
and they were very light in color otherwise.
So with a dark edge, and they're still doing that this year?
And they still somehow like that, but I don't know. If they don't flower, they only have one clump, has only one flower this year. And, of course, the flower is not why I grow them.
I grow them because
I have a very shady yard facing north, and there's a huge old Norway maple there, right?
Right, yeah. And hostas are famous for doing well in shady locations.
Yeah, well, this is why I finally succeeded with hosta.
Mm-hmm.
I tried patchy sandra and whatever. I wasn't very lucky with any of it. But hosta had been growing nicely, and especially at the edges where I have a little garden.
So tell me, do you have any idea what variety of hosta you're growing? Or?
Unfortunately not. I used to buy them every time I saw one, you know.
Yeah.
And some of them were beautiful. They were dark green with white edges. And now, those died last year slowly.
Hmm.
From the bottom up, they were brown leaves, and all of a sudden the whole plant disappeared, you know.
Okay, so last year was a very sunny, hot summer, And so in the shade under maple trees, particularly where the maple is sucking whatever liquids were available, it is possible that the hostas just struggled too much with lack of moisture to stay alive. The other thing that might have done damage to them last year and would have carried over to this year is a virus that some hostas will suddenly start presenting as not looking like they used to look. The leaves can get all kind of gnarly and twisted. You can get some different coloration on the leaves. Ultimately, the virus is a huge problem because it spreads to the other hostas and all the hostas start looking particularly, you know, looking quite bad. This year, opposite to last year, we're having lots and lots of moisture. So there's no shortage of moisture for the hostas. But then there are an awful lot of slugs and snails out there. The population of slugs and snails at my house is unbelievable. I've gone out in the dark and taken some pictures, and it's like the ground is just covered with slugs and snails.
Go out in your bare feet then.
Yikes. No, it's pretty crunchy. Not to mention squishy. You're in Rexdale. I garden in Richmond Hill, and in June of this year, we had quite a severe hailstorm, and the hail just absolutely destroyed the hosta leaves, just shredded them. Plus, all the slugs and snails have been going to town. So my hostas are looking pretty rough, I will say that. They do look like they've been through the ringer. However, next year's a new year, right? Like, it's all going to be a brand new year, brand new leaves. Everything's going to start fresh. What I would do in your case, Trudy, is I would visit in Rexdale. Go out to best place you could go to would be Humber Nurseries or one of the garden centers in your area. And as we get towards the end of August and into September, all the plants are going to be on sale. It's the old end of season, clear things out. So I would be looking to get some discounted hostas if I were you and go back in there and replace where you lost some. But just, you know, make sure that the soil, you've added some good manure, some organic matter, water thoroughly. And then remember, if we do get a dry year, you are going to have to water those plants, particularly underneath a water-hogging maple tree. All right.
Okay, Trudy. Thank you for calling in and getting that sage advice from Charlie. And we have to take a wee bit of a break here. But in the meantime, I'll let you know those phone numbers again, just in case we can. We only have one line open. That's okay then. 416-360-0740. Anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. Charlie shall return to the airwaves, as will I, in moments.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And the sous chef of the garden, Frank Proctor, here, welcoming from Oshawa. There's Nancy. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to the show.
Hi there.
Morning.
How's Charlie?
Excellent.
I have a rose, and this happened last year as well as this year. It starts out great, you know, nice and green leaves, beautiful flowers. Mm-hmm. And then it seems as if all the chloroform in the leaves drains out, and I have these pinky red leaves. And I just looked out a while ago, and the leaves are beginning to green again. Now, last year was dry. This year it's wet.
Yeah. Do you know what kind of rose it is?
I forget. I knew you were going to ask me.
That's okay. But pinky red leaves. Okay, that's weird.
Do you know what the top of a smoke bush, very tippy-tippy top?
Well, when it's
that
smoking.
Pinky color?
So when it's flowering or just the leaf color?
No, well, I guess whatever they're doing. No, they're not flowering. It's
the smoking
end of the leaves. That's the color they are, if you can think of that color.
All right. And are your roses in full sun? How much sun do they get?
Yes, my backyard. You've been here. Backyard's full sun.
I had a feeling I knew who you were. I've been to your place, yes. All right. That is very full sun. All right. So that's good. Roses should be happy. When leaves turn red, which they will sometimes do, and it'll start on the edges, and then it'll move in. But it's you get a real red edge, and it might be green in the center. That usually means plants are getting too much sun, which is pretty odd. Roses never, you can't give roses too much sun.
The only one that does that.
Yeah, okay, so just that one variety does that. But, yeah, so, you know, it could, it's it the leaves are responding to light levels.
Okay.
I think. And so now you're seeing the red is disappearing and the leaves are looking more normal, and that's because our light intensity has gone down quite a bit as the earth is turning and the sun is coming in on a stronger slant, and the days are obviously getting shorter as well than back 2 months ago when, you know, the sun was right overhead and obviously longer days. So yep. I think that's what's going on. Like, I don't think it's a problem. It might look a bit odd when it's happening. But I don't think it's anything that's going to cause the demise of the rose or anything like that.
No, it hasn't adjusted, you know, like leaves falling and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. I was curious and just thought maybe you would have an answer.
Well, at this point, that's my answer. My answer is it's sun. It's sunlight. I mean, I can double check that and see if there's any other reason that could happen. But that definitely does happen when light levels are extremely high.
Okay.
And maybe a little bit of shade. Maybe it needs a nice, you know, Rose of Sharon or something nearby, something that'll cast a bit of shade.
Well, it has a burning bush fairly close to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got getting out of hand, too. Okay.
Happy plants, right?
You've got a number of problem children there. That's what's going on.
Yeah, they just keep growing. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Thank you, Nancy.
Thanks for calling. Nice to hear from you.
Speaking of sun, going to be a very interesting day on Monday with a total eclipse.
I know.
Boy, oh, boy. We'll maybe talk about that some other time, but... Yeah.
I guess the place to be seeing the
down
best.
In the middle of the States.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was listening to a different radio station on the way here this morning, and somebody called from a Greyhound bus on his way to Nashville to go watch the eclipse.
Wouldn't that be cool?
It was, he was kind of.
We get about 70% of it apparently here in Ontario. Anyway, on to our callers because they're waiting patiently. Like, there's Sally in Hamilton. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. I have a problem with my grass. Our grass is very, very lovely, but our grass is turning like orange, and we notice there's like wasps or hornets flying very, very close to the grass. And when the grass is dry and you walk on it, you get all this stuff on your shoes.
And it's orange.
It's orange.
You know what you know what that is? That's a disease. It's a rust disease.
A wasp.
Like R-U-S-T. Just like it looks like on your shoes. That orange is the spores that are sitting on the leaves, the blades of grass, and they come off the grass and stick to your shoes. And the reason you've got that rust is because, well, let's think. Do you have potentially a fair amount of thatch in your lawn? Meaning the drainage isn't excellent in that area and that it tends to be a bit on the soggy side?
I think probably we do because it's quite thick, the grass.
Yeah. What I would, to avoid this, it's not going to kill your grass or anything like that. It's just going to look, it doesn't look very nice right now. And of course, it also gets all over your shoes. I think the wasps and hornets is just coincidental. There's nothing really going on there. But it goes back again to that, just that high moisture level in the soil. So we've got lots and lots of moisture, and fungal diseases are super happy with these conditions. For the future, whether it's this fall or next spring, I would consider getting a thatching rake. And when you're raking your lawn, which we do for sure in the spring and can do in the fall as well, consider doing this dethatching, and that'll help just, alleviate some of that thickness, which will then encourage water to get through better, the fertilizer can get through better. And you should definitely remember to do the fall fertilizing, either September or October for the lawn, because the healthier the lawn is, the more it can withstand any stresses from various diseases.
Mm-hmm.
But the rust is not that unusual, and it does happen when we get the real wet summers.
Oh, so that's what it is, too much water.
Yep. And humidity, things you can't control. I mean, you don't. Do you have an irrigation system by any chance?
No.
Okay, good. I was going to say, if you do, then shut it off. Okay.
Yeah, no, we don't.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for
calling
in.
Calling.
Yep. Yeah, we couldn't do it without you, for heaven's sakes. We have to take just a wee bit of a break here.
All right.
Give you a chance to regroup your forces, Charlie. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, well, I admire you so much. You're able to just ad-lib through all of it as if it's nothing. And yet it's you're draining all that information from your noggin. Hello. Yeah.
Well,
information that
you can
I don't
see. You can see my eyes are starting to go like.
All right. But we have a first-time caller patiently waiting on the line, so let's take a break and come back and chat with them.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And here we are. I do believe we got a first-time caller again here. Hey, there you go. Evelyn, that's for you right here in Toronto. Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I've always wanted to call in, so here's my
option. There you
go.
Well,
there you are.
So we have roses on the west side of our home, and they're approximately 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've found over the years, and really didn't think about it until this morning with some of the calls, that the growing season for those roses are quite short. So they come out around mid to late June, and they really only flower for, I would say, 3 to 4 weeks.
Right.
And then we do not have roses.
Re-blooming.
Throughout.
Okay, yeah, because they're old, old varieties by the sounds of it. Yeah.
Okay.
How big are these, like big shrub roses?
They are. And they're against a wall.
So how deep is that garden? 3 feet, 4 feet?
I would say, yes, probably 3 to 4 feet.
Okay. And at this point, these, and how tall are the roses that you've got there now?
Well, the roses aren't blooming any longer.
No.
But the plant is probably, I would say, a little more than 6 feet.
Yeah. So, okay, when it does bloom, is it a rose that you love? Like, is it very fragrant or a beautiful color? Oh.
You're okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, that answers that question. So, okay. So,
I mean, they are nice, but they're not that full, really.
But can I give you a suggestion? And I know that that's why I wondered, are these like really special roses? If they're not special, and it was a big old rose bush, like a 30-year-old rose bush, I personally wouldn't want to do this. I would hire some handy-dandy person who is going to cut that all down and dig all that out. So
right.
I say goodbye to that rose or those roses. Now we've got that west wall, which is absolutely perfect. Roses love to be on a west wall because the wall gets all hot from the sun and it provides this nice warm backdrop. And it's very excellent way to avoid diseases to have roses up against a hot wall like that. And then obviously you would amend the soil. After 30 years, it's going to be depleted of nutrients. So you're going to get a bunch of composted manure. You're going to dig that all in. You're going to go to your local garden center, whichever is sort of your favorite, and you're going to look for some of the newer variety of roses. I have been so pleased this year with, there's a whole, they're called the knockout roses. So just like a knock, K-N-O-C-K, knockout, is a series of roses. The first one was just a single red flower. Now there's double red knockouts. There's pink knockouts. There's even coral colored. So, and they're not, like the buds look like a traditional rose, but when they open, they're not a million and one petals. They're fairly simple flowers, but boy, are they spectacular. Bloom nonstop. We're talking blooming from June, and these roses at my place have been blooming this year. They've loved all this water and the sun when it's come out. Not a speck of disease, not a single insect, just bang of color and still going strong. I don't deadhead them. I don't do anything. And I know they're just going to keep blooming right through till Christmas or, you know, hard frost. And then next spring, I'll start the season by cutting them down and fertilizing in the spring and then ignore them for the rest of the season.
Gee, Evelyn, that sounds like an excellent idea, doesn't it?
So the newer varieties of roses like that, they're like a flowering shrub that just keeps on flowering. They're not particularly fragrant. So if you were looking for fragrance, you might want to think about mixing in. Remember last week we were talking about that At Last rose?
Mm-hmm.
So it's called At Last.
Very
fragrant, and again, you know, 3 feet wide, 3 feet tall. That one's a coral color. The knockouts are not fragrant, but they are super easy to grow.
Would you be able to plant them this time of year?
Oh, sure. Yep. You'd be able to buy them in a pot, and as long as your ground is not frozen, you can plant those anytime. But just make sure you do take out the old and get that soil amended.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. That's great.
All
okay.
Right.
Thank
Good
you.
Good luck with that.
Hey, we have a caller in from just across the border.
Oh, so
here.
We do, yeah.
And I got to find out where Derby, New York is. Hello, Anne. Where the heck are you located?
Derby is about 30 miles south of Buffalo.
Okay.
Oh, excellent. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm near the lake. Well, I have the same problem that I had last year, and a lady called earlier with the same problem. I have the same problem. It's my hostas. Something's happening to the hostas. I have hundreds of hostas. Now, I have them under maple trees. I have them under pine trees. I have them in mostly shade, a whole mixture of different areas around my very large yard. These plants are shrinking in size. I'm talking about plants that were once 3 feet wide are now down to a foot and a half. And it's mostly the hostas that are affected the most are the ones with any white or light green. Now, last year when I called, I told you about this, and you said, well, lift them out in one section and put new mulch down and manure, and I did that. No change.
Wow.
And now a lady who lives about two blocks from me, she's also complaining of the same problem. Now, I water these. I mean, it's just...
Yeah, it's not a water issue.
Hostas were beautiful. And even when they throw up a flower, the flower is kind of like... the stem isn't as thick, and the flower is... it's like it's weepy. It's not very strong.
And when you did the lifting and sort of soil amending, did you do any dividing with those roses?
Those hostas? Matter of fact, what I do to hostas, I pick the small ones up and I put them in planters, and then I give them to friends. Yeah. Even when I put them in planters, I'm saying, these hostas are not growing.
Wow.
Something is happening.
Yep. Now, something is.
What?
Something is happening. So this is piqued my interest between you and Trudy, who called from Rexdale here in Ontario. Issues with the hostas not growing to full size. So you know what? Leave this with me because we're almost to the end of the show. So I'm going to, thanks for giving us a call. Listen next week and I will report back. I'll take this home as some homework.
There's a hosta farm that's about 60 miles from me. I'm going to call them up and see if they report any changes.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be the growers that'll have the insight into what's going on here. But so excellent. See if you do your homework, I'll do mine, and we'll get together again next Saturday and chat it up and see what's going on there. Maybe we can solve the problem for everybody.
Thanks for calling, Ann. Nice to have you with us here on a Saturday morning, and when our show is just about over. We're I don't know whether you're in for a treat, but I am. Charlie and I usually head off to High Park to the Grenadier Restaurant after the show to have a little postmortem on the show and just to have a nice breakfast. So today we're being joined by my youngest son, Toby, and his lovely wife, Katie, and the kids, Sydney, Ellie, and Sammy.
I can't wait.
Are you prepared?
Huh? I don't know. The wild child in me will come out, I guess, when I'm hanging out with the wild children.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to be fun.
We'll eat outside.
Yeah.
Sounds good. All right. Looking forward to it. Steak and eggs, you're paying, right?
Yes, I am. I'm picking up the whole bill. Wow.
There you go. All right. Well, and you're back this afternoon with more on the go.
I'll be here.
And so thank you, Frank, the best sous chef in the world. Couldn't do without you. And yes, I'm going to have to report back on hostas, and I'm going to check into scorch on chestnut trees. Maybe there's a little more that's happened in the last 40 years that I'm not aware of, to go back to Heather, our first caller today.
Right.
So I've got lots of work to do.
You do. Sebastian, thank you, my friend.
Yes, exactly. Couldn't do it without Sebastian. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.